Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For like a week or 10 days. Well, that's summer here in Louisiana. So we're here. And as gardeners, we do take into consideration this particularly stressful season. It's stressful on us, and it is stressful on the plants and our landscapes as well. About the only plants that revel in the heat of summer, that celebrate it and enjoy it and just really strut their stuff in the heat of summer, tropical plants, tropicals native to climates that have hot summers, and they love the weather here in the summertime, which is why Louisiana gardeners tend to use tropicals in the landscapes, particularly in South Louisiana, where many tropicals can sneak by winters and survive and come back year after year for us. They just do a beautiful job in our landscapes. We can't be too much in using them. Don't put tons and tons in your landscape. You'll have fabulous looking landscapes in, you know, July, August, September, and October, but then you have a terrible looking landscape in December, January, February, and March, when all the tropicals get unhappy or get burned down over the wintertime. So balance your tropicals and your hardy plant materials, particularly your evergreen hardy plant materials, to make sure that your landscape maintains a decent structure and appearance during the wintertime. You're not relying on big clumps of ginger, for instance, that are going to turn brown in winter and look terrible. But after having said that, those gingers will be glorious through the heat of summer. You won't have to worry about them a bit. In addition, the heat tolerance of tropicals makes it possible to plant them this time of the year. Now, y'all, we are well beyond the ideal planting season for hardy trees and shrubs and ground covers. We've entered the very stressful summer season. It is hard on newly planted plants in our landscapes to settle in and get established when they're under so much heat stress. It's a challenge to them. And when they're challenged, it means we may have more failures along the way. So we try to avoid as much as possible planting trees, shrubs, ground covers, and vines, all our good hardy plant materials, this time of the year. From now until the weather cools down in October is not the best time. Will they survive if you plant them? Oftentimes, with the proper care, you can get them through the summer. Proper care primarily means watering properly, which can be a challenge during the heat of summer. Be that as it may, keep in mind that the tropical plants love to be planted this time of the year. So if you need to fill in some areas, you can use hot weather bedding plants to provide color through the summer and then wait and fill in an area and then wait and plant that area in the fall, or put some tropicals in to hold that area. And then come October or November, December, when you want to plant your permanent plants, you can move those tropicals out and put your permanent plants in. But try to avoid planting your hardy plants. It's just more of a challenge to keep them alive and to get them to establish properly through the summer season. We're about to enter something else that we have not encountered much these past few months, and that is drought. We've had a wonderful amount of rainfall just about every month, a little over most of the months of spring. So we've had plenty of rain, haven't needed to water much at all, certainly haven't needed to water established shrubs and lawns and trees. They've all been just fine. But we're about to hit the point where that's going to be necessary. So as it comes into, as we hit this 90 after 90 after 90 degree weather, do keep in mind that we're going to be dry over the next week or so, and it doesn't take long at all for our landscapes to dry out when the temperatures are hitting 90s. So begin to plan on your irrigation system being on more regularly through the coming weather, and be prepared to get out and do some irrigation Watch your lawn. You don't have to water your lawn if it looks good. If you walk out and look at your lawn and it looks perfectly fine, then the grass is perfectly fine. It'll let you know if it gets thirsty. Grass blades will start to fold slightly, like a book. The blades will begin to fold along the mid-vein. The grass will take on a kind of a slight grayish appearance. And when you look at it, you across the lawn, and that slight, subtle grayish appearance, that turned gray. And in addition, when you walk across the lawn, you see your footprints because the grass doesn't spring back up as readily when it's drought stressed. When you see those signs, it is definitely time to water your lawn. But a lot of people water lawns when the lawns are still happy. They have enough water. People just say, oh, well, it's been dry. I must need to water my lawn. So, again, make sure your landscape areas that you irrigate really need to be irrigated. And oftentimes you can wait to see slight drought stress signs to make sure that you're not watering too often. Watering things too often in the heat of summer is an issue. You can't just say, well, if it's hot and I like to water, plants love water, no harm's going to come from it. When you water too much in the heat of summer, you greatly increase disease problems, lawn disease problems, root rot problems, and all kinds of issues. So make sure you water properly, water deeply and thoroughly when you irrigate, and then don't irrigate again until it's necessary. For goodness sakes, don't water landscape plants every day. That means you're watering improperly and keeping the foliage too wet on those plants. So keep that in mind as well. And keep in mind any questions you might have today. I've rattled on in my introductory comments here, and we're about to go to break. But look, if you've got a gardening question, now's the time to hop in, line on up. Call in that phone number. It's 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. And we'll be back right after this. Good morning. We're talking gardening. And if you've got a gardening question, a problem going on in your landscape, whether it's insects or disease problems, maybe weeds are getting to you this time of the year. If you're wondering what to plant in your vegetable garden or what to plant in your flower beds to keep them productive and beautiful through the summer season, any kind of gardening information that you might need, that's what I am here for. Don't let the program go by without getting the information you need to make those plants grow just as good as you want them to. And that phone number to call, once again, is 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. I wanted to say a few things about the vegetable garden. Some changes are happening as we move into this heat. Now, one group of vegetables that we are always focused on late May, early June, is the onion family. And we can grow a variety of different members of the onion family, including the popular bulbing onions that we all love to cook with so much, green onions or scallions, bunching onions that we like to use in the green stage. We also grow garlic. Garlic is very popular, and of course garlic is a main ingredient in Creole and Cajun cooking, so garlic is near and dear to our hearts as well. And also leeks. We oftentimes will grow leeks and other minor onion members like chives we may grow as well. One thing to keep in mind is that our onion family growing season basically is when the weather is relatively cool, and that's from the fall around about October until the weather warms up in late May. And some of the onion crops will take that long to mature. Both garlic and bulbing onions are planted in the fall around about October, and then they grow over the winter, and they don't bulb up and make their nice bulbs. In the case of garlic, they section up into toes. In the case of onions, they make one large bulb. That doesn't really mature, again, until late May or June. So those of you who have bunching onions in your garden, they should be bulbing up nicely at this point. If you're not sure, pull some of the soil from around the base of the foliage, and you'll be able to see the developing bulb. And there's no hurry to pull it. A good sign that your onions are getting ready to harvest is the tops begin to look poorly. The onions begin to go dormant for the summer season. And so the foliage begins to lose vigor. It gets yellowish, begins to fall over. And when you begin to see those signs and the bulbs are nice sized, it's time to harvest. And oftentimes we'll pull the onions up and lay them on the row and let the foliage dry out before we actually gather the onions and bring them inside for storage. So again, if you're growing bunching onions, the time to harvest is in the next few weeks. Same thing with garlic. It's not going to get any bigger. So by the early part of June, which is around the corner, you can be pulling your garlic. And again, the foliage will start looking tired when it's time to harvest the garlic. Bunching onions are harvested through the winter season, both for their tops and their small white bulbs. But around about late May, early June, they begin to hunker down and go dormant in the heat. And you can lift your bunching onions, dry them off, and save the little bulbs, and then plant them back out again in September or October for another crop. So some things going on with the onion family at this time. It is a popular time to harvest a bunch of them or to get them out of the garden. Their season is finished. All right, let's head to the phones. We have Curtis calling in from Beta Springs. Curtis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hey, I got a couple of trees. I got two pear trees on my front lawn and two Japanese magnolia trees. And they start off pretty good, you know, in the spring and beginning of summer. But it happened a couple of years in a row, like about halfway through the summer, the leaves started to get black. And I don't know, I thought it was dirt the first year. But I think it's some kind of fungus because the leaves start dying.
Well, let's take the Japanese.
Any idea?
Well, let's take the Japanese magnolia first. It's a lovely tree, well adapted to our climate, blooms beautifully in the spring, and produces attractive foliage. It's not as pretty as the southern magnolia foliage, that dark green, shiny foliage, but it's decent enough foliage on a Japanese magnolia. But these trees are famous for losing their foliage quality in the late summer. That is virtually all of the Japanese magnolias. The foliage quality begins to go down, usually beginning around about August, sometime as early as July, but usually by August, you're noticing spots on the foliage, some grayish look, right, some blackish look, scorched edges, just a variety of things that make the leaves look less attractive. And they continue to look less attractive through the late summer into the fall until they finally drop their leaves. Next spring, kaboom, gorgeous, beautiful, healthy foliage, nice flowers.
Right.
So this is not something you have to worry about. You might find it unfortunate or less desirable that the tree doesn't maintain its foliage quality through the late summer. But it's not harmful to the tree. It's certainly not something you need to be overly concerned about, other than to walk by and go, you know, I wish you'd look better this time of the year. I really do. But it doesn't. It's just in its nature. The older they are, you know, a tree that's 5 years old will do this worse than a tree that's 10 years old, that will do it worse than a tree that's 15 years old. So as trees get older, they tend to have less of that. They tend to hold their foliage quality a little bit better. Now on the pears, pears are prone to a variety of fungal leaf diseases, leaf spots and so forth. But also when you say the leaves turn black, you should always check for sucking insects. Black leaves can indicate sooty mold. Now sooty mold is a fungus, but it's not a fungus that's attacking the tree. Sooty mold is a fungus that lives off the excretion of sucking insects like aphids. And pears are very prone to aphid infestations. And so if you get a lot of aphids in the tree, they excrete a lot of honeydew. You could have sooty mold come in and grow on that honeydew and cause the leaves to turn black. Again, it's not life-threatening. It's not a big deal. You can spray the tree with something to control the aphids if the trees aren't too big. All kinds of garden insecticides control aphids. So just go to your local nursery and say, I need to get something for controlling aphids on a fruit tree, and they'll give you they'll sell you the appropriate product. But it could be leaf spots. But Curtis, to control leaf spots on a fruit tree like a pear is going to be spraying every 7 to 10 days through the summer season. That is, you have to keep the tree protected with fungicide sprays all summer long to keep the fungal organisms from attacking the leaves. So certainly beginning in June, you'd get a fruit tree fungicide. Chlorothalonil would be a good choice, and spray the whole tree about every 7 to 10 days through the rest of the summer. And most of us aren't willing to do that unless it's life-threatening, unless it's something we have to do to save the life of a plant. And the leaf spots on the pears, again, it's no big deal. The leaves will shed in the fall. The trees will come back out beautifully in the spring, and they'll be fine. So overall, it may look bad, Curtis, but in neither circumstance do I really see an overwhelming need for you to do a lot of spraying and treating, and the trees will recover and be fine without it.
Yes, they do. They always come back looking good, and I'm glad it's not anything bad.
There you go, Curtis. Great. Good news there.
Thank you.
You take it easy. Appreciate the call. All righty, folks. It's time for us to catch y'all up. We got the CBS News Break coming up for the national news, and then Don Ames is also in the newsroom to provide you the WWL First News, all the local news you need to know. But after the news we catch you up on, we'll be catching you up on more gardening information right here on The Garden Show. Stay tuned. Good morning. I appreciate you joining me on The Garden Show this morning, and I'm here at your disposal for free. You can just pick up the phone, dial the number, and get gardening advice to help you do the right thing in your garden. Get your questions answered and move on and be successful. If you've got a gardening question, 504-260-1870 is the number to call. Up right now is Sue calling in from Covington. Hi, Sue. Good morning.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm real good. Sue, what can I do for you?
Well, for Mother's Day, I received a tulip plant, and the flowers are dying, and the tulip bulbs were growing in water. So I'm just not sure how I am. May I save the bulbs? How do I? When do I plant them?
Actually, you may not, Sue.
In
this instance, think of it as a flower arrangement that you received,
uh-huh.
And when the flowers have finished, just toss. Now, if you're a composter, the bulbs can be chopped up and thrown in your compost, so
yeah.
They can be recycled and continue to be useful. Two issues with your situation, Sue. Number one, tulips don't rebloom well for us. Even if tulips are planted into the ground here and grown properly in a good location, our climate is not such that those tulips left in the ground would rebloom for us. Our winters are too mild, and they don't get enough chilling. Tulips that are forced in containers in soil or water are never planted. If you lived up in Pittsburgh and you got a pot of tulips for Mother's Day with them growing in soil, we still probably wouldn't tell you to plant those in the ground. It just takes too much out of the bulbs to grow them in containers like that. But if you lived in Pittsburgh, I would tell you could plant tulips in your garden and they would come up and bloom for you year after year. But here, it just, our climate is just wrong. So it's sad to do, but even gardeners that grew tulips in their gardens, Sue, when the flowers finish and the foliage starts looking bad, they rip the tulips out of the garden bed, chop them up, and throw them in their compost pile. They're just not one of the bulbs that will rebloom for us.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, is to throw away a plant or a bulb. Well, okay, then. I thank you very much.
You're so welcome, Sue. Appreciate the call. That was a good one. A lot of people wonder about what to do with their tulips.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. All right, next caller up is Mary, calling in from Henley Field. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Just wanted to give you and your listeners a heads up for next weekend. Crosby Arboretum will be having its pollinator plant sale, and this is the first time that we're doing just flowers. We're doing a couple of other shrubs, but mostly pollinator flowers, and the sale will open up to members at 9 o'clock on Friday and Saturday, and 10 o'clock to non-members. And it'll go to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we have a wide variety of pollinator plants. They're all native to South Louisiana and Mississippi. And we would love to have your listeners come over and see what we have to offer.
You know, that's such a wonderful opportunity, Mary. And I thank you so much for calling. And I would let all the listeners out there know, if you know of a good gardening event, a plant sale or something going on that you think the listening audience of, you know, lots of gardeners out there would be interested in, feel free to contact me or to call on into the show to get a plug for it. Pollinator plants are so important these days, and that's such a topic that's so much on the mind of so many gardeners. And finding good native pollinators is not always so easy at local nurseries and garden centers, particularly native types. So this makes a wonderful opportunity to gardeners who, number one, are aware of and interested in providing pollinating plants or pollinator plants for, you know, bees and butterflies and hummingbirds and other insects and animals that do pollination. And in addition, gardeners that are interested in native plants, since these pollinator plants are native, they would be interested in attending the sale as well. So this is going to be next Saturday on June the 1st. Members of the Crosby Arboretum can enter at 9, and it's Saturday and Sunday?
No, it's Friday and Saturday.
Oh, Friday and Saturday.
And,
so 29th and 1st. Okay.
That's 30. Correct.
All right. So Friday and Saturday from 9 for members to 2, and for non-members, y'all can get in at 10 till 2 o'clock. So Friday, Saturday, wonderful opportunity. Mary, where can people go maybe online to get more information?
There, we have a website, Crosby Arboretum, and if you don't know, it's in Picayune. You can get all the information about the plants that we are offering, as well as the Arboretum. The Arboretum is really beautiful. We have 3 miles of hiking trails that go through forests as they would have been seen at the end, the beginning of the last century. We do a lot of burns that help to reduce the number of understory trees, which shows the longleaf pines as they would have been seen. And lots of other beautiful things to see at the Arboretum.
Well, it is a wonderful facility. And this is a great way to introduce people who might not be as aware of it to it. So, y'all, if you want more information, just do an internet search for Crosby Arboretum. That's C-R-O-S-B-Y Arboretum. Find their website, and you'll get all you need to know. Mary, thank you for calling.
Oh, and thank you so much for your show, Dan. Really enjoy it. And thanks for getting the word out to your listeners. Hope to have lots of people come by and buy your milkweed and scarlet hibiscus and irises and all of a lot of other
wonderful,
beautiful flowers.
Wonderful.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Mary. All right, folks, okay. Stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Good morning. We're talking gardening. And if you've got a gardening question, that is what I am here for. You heard the phone number. Call on in, and I'll be happy to help you out. 504-260-1870 is the number to call. Heading to the phones, we have Craig up next, calling in from New Orleans. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. How's everything?
Very good. What can I do for you?
I have a wild plum tree, and it's got 3 fawns coming out the ground. And it's about 10 foot tall, maybe about 7-8 years old. 2 of the branches coming out the ground died. The other one's green as green can be. Any idea what's going on with that?
Well, there are lots of possibilities, Craig. Plums are prone to a wide variety of insect and disease problems. Some of the insect problems that can cause sections of the plant to die include borers. So you might want to look over the trunks that died and see if you see any holes in them or bleeding coming out of them.
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. I grew up on a vegetable farm. I checked everything, and don't see nothing about it. Nothing.
All right. Well, scales are issues. So they're all kind of pests that can attack the upper part of the plum tree. But if the dead sections are clean, there's nothing on them, no scale, no holes, no obvious signs of anything attacking the upper part of the plant, then the issue most likely was below ground. And that would have been something attacked the root system, killed off a section of the roots, which was providing water for those 2 trunks. When they were deprived of water, they died. So if nothing attacked the upper part, then the chances are it was a below ground attack. That caused it. Now, all you can really do at this point, Craig, is prune off the dead trunks, prune them down back to their point of origin. They're not going to do the plant any good. It doesn't mean that the third trunk is going to necessarily
die. That's
what I wouldn't be surprised if it did necessarily because, something has killed the other 2. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if it survives, persists, and continues on indefinitely. The bottom line to this is that there's not really anything you can do under the circumstances. Below ground issues are really beyond our reach, beyond our control. And so it's going to be up to the tree to defend itself. I will tell you, be careful not to water too much Watering a tree that has root problems tends to exacerbate the situation. So I'm not sure if you tried watering the tree more because it had these dead, dying branches. But whatever you do, don't water the tree excessively. After 7 or 8 years, it's established and really should not need any supplemental irrigation, even during relatively dry weather. So do be careful about that. That's the one thing you can do in this situation is make sure you don't water excessively.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Well, good luck. I hope it holds on forever, Craig.
Like I said, as soon as we picked all our plums off, that's when the tree started dying.
Well, at least you have that one trunk left, and let's be optimistic.
Thank you, buddy.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right, folks, stay tuned. Quick break, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning, and I wanted to thank everybody. I know there are a lot of faithful listeners out there that tune in every Saturday morning, one way or the other, in your car, on your computer, on your home radio, and listen in and get good information, I hope, and call in sometimes. And I have certainly enjoyed the program over the years. Y'all know I've been doing this program since 1990. Can you believe that? 1990. I want to let you all know that there's going to be a bit of a change. Good news here. The program is moving from the current time slot from 7 to 9 to another time slot from 9 to 11. Are y'all listening up? So next weekend, next Saturday, if you turn on your radio to listen to me at 7 o'clock, you're not going to hear me. You won't hear me until 9 o'clock. So sleep a little later. Get up and get your coffee going a little bit later. And then be sure you tune in at 9 o'clock. I'll be on from 9 until 11 from now on. And we'll still have a great time. Lots of calls, lots of good gardening information, the same program. In fact, for many, many years, I was on from 9 till 11 was my original time that I was on for years and years. And switched over to 7 to 9, get some of those early listeners. But I'm happy to switch back. And so remember, mark your calendar and try to remember that if you tune in next Saturday early and you don't hear me, it's not because I'm gone. I'm not gone. I'm still here. It's just I'm going to be on from 9 until 11. And tell your friends. You probably got some friends. Y'all probably get together and go, oh, did you hear what Dan was talking about Saturday? So make sure you mention it to them as well. They might not be listening. And we'll make sure we get everybody on board to tune into the new time. Again, I'm really looking forward to it. It won't change the format of the show or anything going on. It's just going to be a little bit later. So I get to sleep a little bit later in the morning. And if you want to, you may as well. Well, we have a whole other hour of the Garden Show coming up from 8 to 9. So there's plenty of time to call in and get your gardening questions answered then. We're going to catch all up on the news at the top of the hour and be back after that. Happy Memorial Day to everybody. If you're on the road, be safe. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of the Garden Show. Great first hour. A little light. I think people are Memorial Daying this weekend. And if you're in your car going out someplace, traveling, do be careful and do be safe and enjoy your trip. And if you're home and you're looking around your yard and you see a few things that need to be taken care of, take care of them. This time of the year in particular, don't let anything get out of hand. Weeds will eat your lunch during the summer months. And it is so uncomfortable to get out and try to weed a bed. So don't let things get way out of hand before you step in particular when it comes to keeping your beds weed-free. Keep those mulches nice and thick. A good 2-inch thick mulch is one of your best defenses against weeds. And act promptly. As soon as you see some weeds encroaching in a bed, whether it's a flower bed or a shrub bed or a vegetable garden bed, act promptly. Go out early in the morning. Now we're looking at the best gardening hours are from like 6 to 8 in the morning. Try to get out while it's cool and get some of that done. But do try to stay on top of it, because once it gets really bad and overgrown and it's going to be a major project, you definitely aren't going to want to get out in the heat and tackle a major project. So speaking from experience and dealing with my own maintenance issues in landscape, do try to stay on top of your weed control this time of the year. They can really get out of hand fast, whether you're physically controlling the weeds or utilizing appropriate herbicides. Stay on top of them, and you won't be sorry that you did. Also, wanted to mention parsley. Parsley is one of our favorite herbs. A lot of our herbs that we grow in our gardens like cooler weather and grow best when it's cooler. Some of the cool season annual herbs, remember, y'all, if you're growing herbs, this is a huge group of plants that are loosely bound together simply by their usefulness to people. There are annuals and perennials and trees and shrubs and herbaceous plants and woody plants. Every kind of lifestyle you can imagine in plants we find in the herbs. So you need to be aware of what your herb's lifestyle is when you purchase them. Are they annuals? Do they live for a year and then die? Or are they perennials? Do they live for a number of years in your garden? Some of the annuals that we grow over the winter include dill, cilantro, fennel, borage, and parsley, to name a few. And these herbs are best planted in the fall for harvest through the winter cool season and into the spring. And by the time it starts hitting the 90s, this time of the year, these herbs will begin to languish a bit. So if you have parsley in your garden now, harvest it generously and dry or freeze. The harvest, the quality of the harvest is going to go down as we move into this really intensely hot weather. Eventually, parsley planted in the fall will bloom and die. If you planted parsley in the spring, and again, that's not the best time, fall is really the best time, your parsley plants may have the stamina to continue through the summer because they probably won't bloom if you planted them in the spring. But even still, it's hard on parsley. Parsley hunkers down in the summer. It doesn't grow much. You can't harvest it much. So really, remember, parsley, as popular as it is a cool season herb for us and will not grow well during the heat of summer. The earlier you plant your parsley, the better. Fall planting is best. If you can't plant it in October, plant it in November. If you can't plant it in November, plant it in December. If you can't plant it in December, plant it in January. But for goodness sakes, don't wait until April to plant your parsley, because here we're at the end of the parsley season and it was just a few weeks ago that you planted. So you're not going to get your bang for your buck out of the parsley that you planted in the spring. All righty, folks, after a few introductory comments, let's see who's on the phone. And if you want to call in with your gardening question, you've got that phone number, 504-260-1870. And we're going to take a break, let everybody call in and get lined up, and we'll be back with more of The Garden Show right after gardening. And I do appreciate you joining me for The Garden Show this morning on WWL. Happy Memorial Day. Let's head to the phones and talk to Mary. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I was wondering, I have some grass control. It's a pre-emergence crabgrass control. And I'm wondering, I don't have a spreader, like a machine spreader. Can you just, first of all, can you put that out at this time of the year? And can you just put it like on a plate and just kind of sprinkle it around? Or would that burn the grass or what?
So this is late. Crabgrass begins to germinate. It's an annual. So come winter, all of the crabgrass dies. There's not a single crabgrass plant left at the end of winter, but they've dropped a lot of seeds, and it's the seeds that come up the next year and create another crabgrass infestation. In order to prevent that from happening, we can put out a crabgrass preventer like the Crabex that you've got before the seeds actually begin to germinate, because once they germinate and the grass is growing, those pre-emergence herbicides don't affect growing crabgrass. They only affect the germinating seeds. So really, it's best to put out a pre-emergence like the Crabex back in early March as the weather is first beginning to warm up. Lots of crabgrass has already germinated. If you don't see a lot of crabgrass in your lawn right now and you're worried that you might see more later, feel free to go ahead and put out the Crabex now. But again, it's late. We normally get far more benefit from an application like that when it's made in the early part of March. You've got to apply it at the right rate. And Mary, if you can figure out some way to finagle the right rate with some, you know, materials that you have there on hand, whether it's a paper plate or whatever, then you may. But you have to make sure that you're putting it out at precisely the rate that is indicated on the label. That is, how many pounds per 1,000 square feet. You've got to measure that out and then apply it evenly over that area. So again, if you're not going to be using a drop spreader, which is really the best way to go, and sometimes nurseries will rent you a drop spreader if you want to use put it out properly. Do make sure you're wearing gloves and everything, because if you've got a plate and you've got stuff, you've got the material right close to you. So wear gloves and stuff. The herbicides are not something that we want to come into constant contact with. Don't use your hand to scatter it out because it's got a herbicide component to it. So feel free to go ahead and use it if you'd like to. The benefit may not be as much as it would have been, but do make sure, no matter how you apply it, you've got to apply it at the rate indicated on the label, or you could cause problems.
Okay, and let me with this couple of bags that I have, would it go bad between now and next year? I can save it till next year and do it in March.
It absolutely won't. Just make sure you keep it nice and dry.
Okay. And, Dan, I have another question. Hibiscus plants, mine flowered all year. I mean, I usually cut them back in March. But, I had giant hibiscus, size of dinner plates, and they were huge. And never wanted to chop it down because of the flowers. Just flowered all year. So I would really need to wait probably till next March to go ahead and trim it back.
Hibiscuses bloom on new growth, and they're pretty much ever blooming, as you've described. So generally speaking, we prune hibiscuses when they need it. As they start to get bigger than we want them to be, we prune them back a little bit to hold them to the size we want them to be. The worst thing to do with hibiscus is let it get way too tall, 6-8 feet tall, and then cut it back to 4 feet. That severe pruning will shut down blooming for probably months, weeks, if not months, as the plant tries to rebalance the roots with the top growth. So again, to hold a hibiscus to the size you want it to be, it's better to prune it back a little bit occasionally than to just say, I don't want to cut it back and let it get way too big, and then be forced to severely prune it.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you, Dan. Love your show.
Thank you, Mary. All right, moving on along, we have Dorothy up next, calling in from Chalmette. Dorothy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm real good, Dorothy. What you got?
I have honeybees. I have a house that's 21 feet in the air, and I've got honeybees. And I know they're an endangered species because they're the ones that pollinate everything. Anybody in your mind that I can call to see about coming to get them? I live on a fixed income. I can't pay for somebody to come get them.
Well, Dorothy, normally there are fees. It's time and money for a professional to come out and collect a bee swarm. So normally fees are expected to be paid, although you can, parlay with the person that comes out and see if they can cut you some slack. Actually, the LSU Ag Center maintains a list of beekeepers all over the state that are available to come out and rescue or control honeybee hives when they are in a location where it's not appropriate. To access that list, all you have to do is search on your internet. Use your search engine and do a search for LSU Ag Center honeybee removal. LSU Ag Center, that's AGCENTER, honeybee removal. And that'll pull up the list. And so no matter where you are in Louisiana, there are beekeepers in your vicinity that you can contact that will do that. And Dorothy, it's wonderful that are they under the house?
Yes.
And so they're easily accessible. They should be able to harvest that colony, that hive, and save it since it's so accessible. Dorothy, after I finish talking to you, don't hang up. The board operator, Joey, is going to chat with you real quick about some local options. But for everybody out there, whenever you have a honeybee issue like that, just go to the LSU Ag Center honeybee removal, and you'll find local professionals that can do the job for you.
Thank you.
Good luck,
Appreciate
Dorothy.
It.
And thanks for being so conscientious about our wonderful honeybees. Take care now. Alrighty, we've got Kathy up next, calling in from Mississippi. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very good, thanks.
I got a beautiful French lavender plant yesterday, and it's in a pot. And I wonder, can I go ahead and put it outside in this climate, or should I just keep it in a pot and enjoy it?
Well, it's kind of up in the air. Lavender is a challenge here in the deep south. In the coastal south, our high humidity and high temperatures in the summertime, and oftentimes rainy periods during the heat of summer, are not to lavender's liking one little bit. And so we oftentimes see heat stress on lavender plants. They just languish and don't do well at all through July and August and into September. If we get a rainy period come through, they're very prone to root rot. And so when a tropical storm might hit, or just a couple of 3 days of rainfall, lavender plants are famous for getting root rot and dying. For that reason, many gardeners choose to grow them in containers. Containers give you more options. The soil drains faster, so they're less likely to get overwatered. Since lavender doesn't like the heat, although it's a plant that loves the sun, during the summertime, lavenders in container can be moved to a spot where they get sun for most of the day, but shade during some of the later afternoon. And that takes some of the heat stress off of them. If you find a spot where they get sun up to maybe 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then shade after that, that helps reduce some of that heat stress. Don't overwater. Don't water until you stick your finger in the soil of the pot and it feels damp. It feels dry. As long as it feels the least bit damp, don't water. When you water, water thoroughly. You can fertilize occasionally, but lavender doesn't grow much here during the heat. So fertilization, ironically, is more important during the fall as the weather cools down and the lavender wakes up and begins to grow more vigorously. If it doesn't make it through the summer, buy lavender in the fall rather than in the late spring. And then you can plant it in the ground or grow it in a pot. You should get a wonderful harvest of flowers in the spring and early summer. And then if the plant doesn't make it, it doesn't make it. So in other words, you can grow lavender as an annual by putting in nice plants in the fall, harvesting your flowers. That's why we normally grow lavenders, for their fragrant flowers. Get a good lavender flower harvest in the spring. And then if the plant doesn't make it, you can just replant again. But kept in containers and taken care of properly, you should be able to get it through the summer.
All right. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep it in a container.
All right, Kathy. Good luck with it.
Thank you so much, Dan. Take care. Bye.
All right. You too now. Bye-bye. All right, folks, don't forget, I need to say several times, because everybody comes and goes as you listen, pass on the word to your friends and pay attention as I tell you. The show time is changing. I've been on from 7 to 9 for a number of years now, and so it's sort of gotten into a habit of being on then. But the time is being moved from 9 to 11. So next week, if you turn your radio on at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock and you don't hear me, don't panic. I'm still here. My show has just been moved to the 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock time point. So keep that in mind as we move on into next week. I'm looking forward to sleeping a little later in the morning. You may be too. All righty, folks. It's time to catch all up on the news at the half hour. We have a CBS News break up first. And then after that, Don Ames is in the newsroom to give you the WWL First News. After the news, we'll be back with more of The Garden Show, your questions, and more gardening information. So stay tuned. Whether it's a weed issue, insects, diseases, or what to plant this time of the year, be happy to help you out with any of those. And so let's go to the phones and talk to Elm in Gentilly. Elm, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, okay. I didn't. The name is Elmo, E-L-M-O, okay.
Elmo, good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. I have relatively quick questions, I think. I have a pear tree that I planted last year. It was a yearling in the spring. My son brought his dog over, and he ate, bit it in half, okay? And so I decided not to do anything with it until this spring. But this spring I saw some leaves growing off the stump. And so I trimmed all the leaves off except for the top two thing. And they formed some nice branches, and they grew up parallel to each other about 4 feet. And it still appears to be growing, but slower than earlier. And I'm thinking now, how do I prune or train this if I want to control the branches that come off of these two because the trees growing parallel, the two branches growing parallel are twisting around each other. I thought that was pretty cool, so I'm just waiting to see what happens.
Well, first off, you should train the pear tree to one trunk. So you have to choose one shoot that comes off the stump.
So I should cut one of them off.
If the stump sends up more than one shoot, choose the straightest, strongest shoot and prune off all the others. After that, it's just a matter of letting it grow. If you want information on how to train a pear tree, the LSU Ag Center has a nice online publication called the Louisiana Home Orchard, and you can access it simply by doing a search for LSU Ag Center Louisiana Home Orchard, and there are diagrams on how to train a pear tree in that book. You won't need to be doing a lot to that tree for a while, certainly nothing this year, probably nothing next year, perhaps not even the year after, but at some point you're going to want to do a little training on that tree and just use that reference to guide you.
Okay. All right.
What else you got? Second question.
I have this crepe myrtle, and, you know, people, I'm just letting it grow, and I look online, and they always are talking about trimming it or pruning it, and I don't want to prune it. I got it up. It's about 20 foot tall now, and I use it as a canopy for shade, you know, about 7 or 8 feet off the ground. And I have elkhorn or staghorn or whatever it's called, you know, hanging under there and stuff like that.
And what kind of plant is it, Elmo?
The crepe myrtle.
Oh, crepe myrtle. Sorry about that. So what's your question?
And then the question is, I'm just letting it grow, and I'm not going to prune it or anything like that. I'm just letting it grow, and I just was sort of curious as to really how tall they get and how long they live.
Elmo, crepe myrtles come in all different sizes. Some of them get to be 10 feet tall. Some of them get to be 30 feet tall. So it depends on the kind of crepe myrtle that you planted. If you still have a tag or remember the name of the variety or cultivar you planted, you can look that up on the internet and find out what its mature height is likely to be. Crepe myrtles don't require a great deal of pruning, generally speaking. If any branches are too low or any problems like that, you can prune to correct a problem. But otherwise, everything's fine. You don't have to be overly concerned.
Okay, but how long do they live? Or do you know?
How long will you live, Elmo?
I can't predict how long an individual
crepe myrtle will live, but they live for decades. I mean, Elmo, it will outlive you.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Okay. Is that long enough?
I'm just a sponge for information. That's all.
Good, Elmo. Well, Elmo, I appreciate the calls. I've run out of time. I got to go to break, but it was a delight talking with you. You take it easy.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, stay tuned, and we'll be back with more of The Garden. Saturday, my time changes for the show. Instead of being on from 7 to 9, the show is shifting to 9 to 11. So tell your gardening friends that like to listen to the show, and don't forget yourself. All right, let's head the phones and talk to Michael, calling in from Pearl River. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
What can I do for you?
I have a question. I plant a garden every year, and I have having problems with the vine borer beetles in my squash plants.
All right. Well, actually, it's a moth. The squash vine borer grows up to be a moth. What actually does the damage, though, is the larva the moths lay eggs on the stem of the squash. The egg hatches, and then the larva burrows into the stem and feeds inside. And that really causes a lot of damage to the plant and oftentimes shortens our harvest and keeps our crop from being so large. Dealing with them is very difficult because the moths, you never see the moths. You never see them fly in and lay their eggs. What you can do is keep the stem protected. Spray the stem regularly with a vegetable garden insecticide like pyrethrin would work, permethrin would work. Something that will keep a protective layer or barrier on that stem, spraying with 7 or Carbaryl, once a week on that stem will help keep them under control. Planting early is our best defense, though, Michael. Planting our squash in mid-March so that we get a big harvest before the squash vine borers become so prevalent is one of our best defenses against them and helps ensure a good harvest. But again, once they get inside, you can carefully take a knife, cut the stem open, remove the larva, and then mound soil over the stem. Sometimes the plant will recover from that, but generally once they get inside, it's just the beginning of the end.
Okay. I noticed it last week, and I put dipole dust around the plant, but it hasn't stopped the beetle because I can still see the yellow inside the stalk.
Well, again, once they're inside, putting something on the outside isn't going to help. So you've got to be preventative and proactive. If this year you didn't get it out early enough, dipel and thuricide will work because this, again, is a moth, a caterpillar. But you've got to keep those constantly on the stem. And don't forget that stuff washes off when it rains or when you water. So you've got to keep those stems protected. You've got to begin doing it before you ever see the squash vine borers appear.
Okay. And one other question. My hot pepper plants, I've noticed at nighttime I have slugs crawling up the stem. What's the best way to prevent them?
Well, if you're out there and you see the slugs crawling up the stems, pick them off and drop them in a container and throw them away. So hand picking is a great way of reducing the population since you're able to see them. You can also put out beer traps. Take a small plastic bowl, bury it in the soil up to its rim near the pepper plants. Put out several and fill the bowl halfway full of beer. And that will trap a lot of them down in that beer, and that will also drop the population. If you feel like you have to use a bait to control them, choose a bait with iron phosphate, like Sluggo, for instance. Iron phosphate is a less toxic product for controlling snails and slugs.
Thank you for your help.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate the call. All righty, folks, thanks. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of The Garden Show right after these messages. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Garden Show. Don't forget, next week on Saturday, June the 1st, I start a new time from 9 to 11. So make sure you delay tuning in, or remember, if you tune in and hear something else, and you don't hear me, I'll be on at 9. Pass the word. We'll be able to get everybody on board here. Alrighty. And don't forget, y'all, if you've got gardening questions, you can get information from your local extension office. Every parish has one. They're a local horticulturist. And so during the week, if you've got questions, I'm not around, do feel free to call your local extension horticulturist with the LSU Ag Center. You can easily find your contact information by simply doing LSU Ag Center in your parish. So LSU Ag Center Orleans or LSU Ag Center Jefferson, and that will bring you links to your local office, and you can find out how to contact your local horticulturist. Further, it's always good to know your local extension horticulturist. You can drop by samples or send them samples. In some instances, they may even be able to stop by on a home visit. So get to know your local extension horticulturist. You'll be glad you did. All right, let's head to the phones and talk to Lisa calling from Slidell. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I have a question about oak leaves.
All righty.
Okay. I've recently moved to a new house, and it's a half an acre piece of property. I have 7 live oaks and 14 white oaks on my property.
Nice.
Oh, it's wonderful. I also have a very established hedgerow of mixed camellias.
Okay.
I want to use the oak leaves as mulch under the camellias. This hedgerow is shared. It runs down the property line. My neighbor has a concern. She believes the oak leaves are bad for the camellias. I'm not that familiar with camellias, so please help me out.
and when she said that, you said, well, why are they bad? And what
yes.
did she say?
Well, what she has seen is the mold that I believe is the mold that's breaking down the oak leaves, and she's seen this, and she thinks it's disturbing the camellias.
Absolutely not. Those oak leaves are a fabulous mulch. So
Well, that's what I thought too, but I said, man, let me make sure.
try to reassure her. It's a shame when, you know, you have good information and somebody comes along and messes you up like that. But oak leaves are a fabulous mulch. You can either grind them, you mow them up with a bag attachment and grind them.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. They make a perfect.
I really prefer to do that because if you can, because then they don't blow in the wind. You know, sometimes a big gust of wind comes along and can blow the oak leaves. If you grind them first or chop them first, that doesn't happen. And they break down rapidly. They add organic matter and mineral nutrients to the soil. They moderate temperature. They control weeds. And the you are exactly right, Lisa. And you explained to your neighbor
those white
thread-like mycelia fungus. Running through the leaves is a beneficial fungus that is decaying the leaves and creating beneficial compost that will make the camellias more healthy. So again, it is a win-win-win situation. Use those oak leaves and your camellias will be happy.
Oh, fantastic. Because look, I've noticed the difference just in the four major oak trees around the property when I started, you know, purposefully, you know, mulching underneath them. They seem to be thriving better.
Put it around them as well. You got lots of leaves to deal with. Don't you dare throw away any. Don't throw away any. Lisa, thank you for the call, and thanks to everybody that called in today. Had a good time. I'll see y'all at 9 o'clock next Saturday morning right here on The Garden Show. Bye-bye now.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.